Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's midday at the movies. I'm Tom Hall, the box office phenomenon that is us. Since director Jordan Peele's newest offering debuted last month, people have been talking about what the movie is saying, what it means, and how it reflects and terrifies us. We'll jump into that conversation with the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, Jed Dietz, and the filmmaker and curator, Elisa Blount-Moorhead. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Henry IV, Part 2 at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company. That's coming up when Midday starts after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday, and today we are in a scandal-free zone. We're not going to talk about the University of Maryland medical system. We're not going to talk about the ex officio mayor or the mayor who's on leave of absence. We're going to talk about that on Monday. But today we're going to talk movies, and we are delighted to welcome Elisa Blount-Moorhead back to the show. She is a filmmaker and creative partner with the Teen Egg Film Studio. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
So the last time you were here, we were actually at the Parkway Theater, I think. This was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
It was our first remote broadcast on the first week of the Parkway Theater. Of course, Parkway Theater, and by the way, I'm delighted that it's been long enough that you've forgotten what a horrible experience it is. So you agreed to come back today. I mean, this is the timing of this couldn't
I'm
be better.
Masochist,
exactly, exactly. But of course, the Parkway Theater, the home, the newish home of the Maryland Film Festival, and our founder and director of the festival, Jed Dietz, is here. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Good to be here always. And of course, and that was a fun day. And less than 2 years ago, it's hard, sort of hard.
I mean, yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. Of course, you have retired, right?
Yes.
And now I understand, by the way, from well-placed sources that you have been elected the co-chair of the movie field trip committee at the Happy Acres Retirement Community in Arbutus. So congratulations on that.
I would take a movie tour for any group anytime. It'll probably include the Parkway, though.
That's right. I don't know. I heard your platform was like, let's go to the Green Turtle and order wings and binge watch, you know, Grace and Frankie. That's what I heard. I'm just repeating what I've heard out on the street. You know, so Linnell and I, my wife Linnell and I, saw Us this weekend at the Parkway. So Elisa, I want to ask you first of all what you think of this movie. And I was interested that a lot of the people at the Parkway Theater on Sunday afternoon, we saw one of the matinees, were evidently there for a second or third time. There's at least one couple I overheard talking about this is the third time they see it. So this is a movie that is like grabbing people by like a fish in a hook and keeping them coming. It's interesting.
I get that because it does have that sort of Kubrick-ish need to sort of like unpack it afterwards, so I can see people going back for a second. I mean, you know, what I like about Jordan Peele, I mean, I like Jordan Peele. I like Get Out, and I'm really excited about Twilight Zone. But what I do like is that he really is he gives a lot of deference to the genre. He really obviously, my favorite film is Rosemary's Baby. So, you know, he really clearly understands.
And what is the genre? Is this a horror movie? What do you think?
I would say, you know, this one is definitely horror, right? But it creeps into thriller and
there are different ones. I mean, there are these super bloody ones, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre that sort of go toward almost camp. And there are sort of the old Hitchcock sort of, you don't quite know what happened, and Twilight Zone would be in that category too. You know, it's just sort of creepy and sort of fantastic mystery. They're the ones where you got pop-out things that get everybody screaming in the theater. This is very much in the Hitchcock creepy category, except in both of these films, I would say, in Get Out and Us, the exploration of our culture through this entertainment, it is entertainment for sure, is a whole new set of eyes. And I just think he's got so much to say on top of this incredible entertainment. And you're right. I mean, in this one, people are going multiple times. There's quite a bit of discussion all over the internet about, you know, the various layers, and that's sort of a pun in the movie. And these performances are incredible. I mean, Lupita Nyong'o, I mean, who's going to be surprised by her doing two great performances? But, you know, these kids are incredible.
So, listeners, what did you think? If you've seen Us, we'd love to have you chime in and let us know what you thought of the movie. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @midday_wypr. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Here's a clip of Us, the new Jordan Peele horror movie.
You know how sometimes things line up?
Yeah.
You know, like coincidences. Since we've been here, they've been happening more and more. I feel like it means like she's getting closer.
Who? The mirror girl?
You don't believe me.
I do. I do. I'm processing. Okay? I just can't believe you kept all this inside for so long. You know I'm here, right?
So we have the clueless husband, you know, not taking seriously the wife's contention. And again, one of the conversations that I heard immediately after was about this genre allocation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a horror movie, people told me. It was a suspense, or it was a suspense movie or a thriller or mm-hmm. something. Like, what's the difference? And we've talked before about how first-time directors often choose the horror genre because it's a good way to cut your teeth. It's a good way to get going in the movie business. You're a filmmaker, Lisa. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you buy that contention?
I mean, I don't know. There's a necessary sort of petri dish of horrors which exists for Black people in America that I think he could mine for any genre. But I mean, I think you can look to his clear inspirations, films like The Frenchville Martyr, The Shining. I mean, there's so many things that are kind of present. And to be honest, listening to that clip reminded me that one of the pet peeves I had watching the film was the father's character, I don't know whether it was in the writing or the directing or the performance, felt a little too bumbling for me, and it was a difficult watch for me. I've sort of found myself saying, I don't know anybody like this. But I do think that, you know, I don't know if I think Jordan Peele's interest is horror. He talks about it a lot. That's his.
Yeah, because he did it as his debut with, yes, you know, Get Out. But then it's not like, oh, I'm going to do a rom-com now. He just went right back to this.
I think what's more interesting about this film is that he is trying to get at that, like, existential duality of Blackness and that, you know, that in being Black in America is, in fact, a horror movie on a daily basis in some instances.
And does he succeed any better or worse or the same in this movie as he did in the first one, Get Out?
For me, Get Out, I was much more interested, even though, again, there were parts of that that are a little bit outside of what my interiority or people that I know interiority, but he also has an unusual set of circumstances. He's a Black man in America who's raised by a white mother, he has a white wife, so he also lives in a particular duality within himself. So,
and grew up pretty privileged, went to great schools, and
Manhattan.
And I think they're quite different. Despite the fact
the two both, movies, you're
yes, the, yes, the two movies. I mean, I think that there's humor in both of them, which I think he delivers so skillfully and delicately, and the creepiness comes at these odd places. You know, it is not a movie where you've just got things jumping out at you and people scream. It's a movie of mystery. And I think he looks at the world as Hitchcock did, as a place of mystery. He, as a Black man in America right now, I think, you know, even more so. And I just think he's totally entertaining. I mean, there's not a second in the movie, I think, that you won't sort of be waiting for what's coming next, and even leave the theater and think about, maybe I want to go back and see a chunk of it again.
Yeah, he does do an interesting job of, you know, introducing elements and images in the beginning of the movie, and he ties it all up very nicely by the end of the movie. We don't want to give anything away, but you know, when you see these images in the first 15 minutes of the movie, and by the end of the last 15 minutes of the movie, they're making sense, kind of, which is satisfying and gratifying. But at least it is Get Out sort of more conspicuously about race? And is this one a little less about race and other things? Because I found some environmental themes in this and some other themes.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of things in there. And some I don't know how much is conscious and unconscious. I mean, Tahir Hemphill is an artist friend of mine who pointed out that the boy's costume and sort of presentation really mirrors Flash Art, which is an African art book. And Robert Ferris Thomas, who's, you know, sort of been in the zeitgeist for a long time. So, I think, again, for me, it's like other things, Get Out as well. It's one of those things where it depends on your perspective. And, you know, obviously I can't speak on his perspective, but there were some things that, again, Black Americans might watch and shrug their shoulders. It may be, again, about, you know, it's a conversation spark. You know, I think it's an interesting approach to a thriller, to the idea of trust and the idea of, you know, sort of, you know, understanding the duality of America on a wider scale, and then, you know, yourself within your family on a smaller scale. So, you know, I think those are things that he sort of gets at. But, you know, there were moments for me that I felt like it was a little bit obvious, you know, and I felt like that in Get Out as well. But again, for some people, it's revelatory. And I think, you know, for this country, for sure, this is the kind of conversation that he wants to happen.
And it seems very few other people have been able to sort of put that conversation front and center in a way that Mr. Peele has been able to do now two times in a row.
I mean,
we hadn't really even stopped talking about Get Out when Us came out. I mean, he's prolific and profound at the same time.
I agree with you. And as Alyssa was talking, it occurred to me one of the most important things about it, and we've talked a lot on the show about sort of the streaming viewing versus going to movie theaters and stuff. This is so important to see in a movie theater. And if you, I almost guarantee you, I don't know every community in the world, but you're going to see it with a mixed crowd, and you're going to learn stuff just from sitting in that theater. And it's exactly what Alyssa was talking about. I mean, there will be reactions from people around you to things that didn't strike you at all, and vice versa. And I think, you know, America's had a difficult time getting to a race discussion. We get defensive. I get it all. This method, I think, really helps us talk. And I don't mean like directly talk, like turn around and talk to each other. But I think it's revelatory. And it's why I think way more than anybody understood having different voices in this medium, maybe every art medium, but this one for sure. I think that's the last time you'll hear anybody preach about these movies, because they're really entertaining movies.
Well, and of course, when we talk about the conversation about race, that's white people are talking about race. Black people don't need to talk about race. They're living. They're living. Exactly.
I would argue we all need to talk about it.
But some of the rhetorical devices are a little bit, you know, they obfuscate what's really going on.
No, but that's the point. I mean, so that he, you know, and he's probably, I've never heard him talk about this, but Jordan Peele, as Alyssa described, you know, coming with mixed family, you know, there's no way he hasn't spent his whole life in some sort of conversation about race. And I'm sure it's frustrating and, you know, like repetitious.
Well, the work they did on Key and Peele was, you know, incredibly insightful and terrific. And Alyssa, talk a little bit. We're going to take a break. But before we take a break, talk a little bit about Twilight Zone. So, when we talk about this genre and stuff, Jordan Peele has now stepped up. And is he going to be the new Rod Serling?
Well, as my father would say, you, sir, are no Rod Serling. I mean, I don't know if anybody could be Rod Serling. And also, again, Rod Serling was a political person. He was very left. I mean, this is, you know, what we do is infused in our work. And so, you know, I think Twilight Zone was already subversive in terms of like what it was doing. So we'll see, you know, what he does. But again, your point, Jed, about sort of his probable preoccupation with race, again, is a very specific perspective, especially, again, for those of us who take some things for granted and also who are not preoccupied with that, but more preoccupied with nuance. And that is why I'm really excited about, like, the other things I hopefully we'll get to talk about, and some of the more self-determined cinema, the Chinese cinema that's happening African cinema that's happening, and the details that people are able to get to when race is not their preoccupation for whatever reason.
Well, we will pick up the conversation then on that point when we come back from a break. Alisa Blount-Moorhead is a filmmaker and curator and the creative partner with the Teaneg Film Studio. Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, to join our conversation after a break, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page, and you can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. By the way, the Baltimore Jewish Film Festival is underway at the Gordon Center for the Performing Arts at the Jewish Community Center up in Owings Mills. It continues until the 16th of April, and we've got a link to details on our website, wypr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, looking ahead to tomorrow, it's going to be Midday on Music. Classical music lovers are crossing their fingers, hoping that Governor Larry Hogan signs a bill that's sitting on his desk to provide supplemental funding for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. The players in the BSO have been working without a contract for several months, while negotiations for a new agreement are at a logjam over whether or not the orchestra can continue to operate as a full-time ensemble. The BSO also has a diversity problem. In a majority black city, only one member of the BSO is African American. These challenges are not unique to the Baltimore Symphony. We'll talk about the state of classical music in Baltimore and beyond tomorrow with Fred Bronstein. He's the dean of the Peabody Institute, and Tim Smith, the former classical music critic for the Baltimore Sun. Plus, the Baltimore Opera Company closed its doors in 2009, and the Lyric Opera of Baltimore also went down in 2017. But opera isn't dead in our city. We're going to talk to James Harp about his new group, the Maryland Opera Company, and the composer Derek Wang. He's going to tell us a little bit about his opera, Scalia Ginsburg, which gets its local premiere this weekend with the Baltimore Concert Opera. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. As I mentioned today, it's Midday at the Movies. Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and the filmmaker Alisa Blount-Moorhead is with the Teaneg Film Studio. They join me here in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we're streaming our conversation. So, Alisa Blount-Moorhead, you are a filmmaker, and the great filmmaker Agnes Varda passed away last week. Assess her significance.
Oh, her significance is unassessable. You know, I mean, obviously for feminist cinema, it goes without saying. But also, so there's lists and scores of people sort of waxing poetic about how she really opened the door for this kind of unflinching lensing through women's ideas and work. But also, I think what's amazing for me, what I am always drawn to about her, is that she could constantly reinvent her own self, her own ideas, her own films. I mean, she made films for 60, right, over 60 years or something like that. I also think she has a very particular kind of significance in the way to sort of avoid a kind of anthropological view. The way she mixed narrative and doc is mind-blowing. Mm. You know, when I think about her early work, you know, I mean, one of her earliest films is about 2 hours in which a woman is waiting to get a diagnosis, you know, and she's a glamorous person, and she's this sort of very specific kind of 50s, 60s character, but it's not centered on her looks, you know?
Yeah, and then she made a film called Gleaners and I about this habit in France, this tradition that goes back hundreds of years of you know, gleaning, picking up things, food stuff that has not been maybe perfect for the market, but is great. And there's, I just, saw after her death. This is wonderful. Mm-hmm. There's this one of the scenes is in a potato field, and there's a famous painting also mm-hmm. goes way back, and these people will come in and pick up the potatoes that aren't perfectly formed, and people have at her doorstep at her. Former doorstep after her death had been leaving piles of heart-shaped potatoes.
We actually have a little clip from a movie she did called Beaches.
Dans ma vie, j'ai été bien entourée. Dans mes miroirs, j'ai rencontré les autres, des autres, et des plages, et toutes sortes de gens.
Second marker.
Je les ai filmés ou pas, compris ou pas, admirés.
So I cry every time I hear that clip for two reasons. Number one, I realize I don't speak French. Number two, Harrison Ford, he's in that clip very briefly there. His French is terrible. Sounds just like English to me. So just the whole thing. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, we can't have very good clips of French movies. I mean, she was 90 years old. There's an interesting piece that you shared with us, Jen, and we'll put it on our website from IndieWire. Number of women filmmakers, Greta Gerwig, Miranda July, 15 and all, talking about the influence that you mentioned, Elisa. Another very significant, influential director died just last week, Barbara Hammer. She was 79 years old, an experimental filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about her work.
Yeah, she was on my mind a lot last week when I was out at the Creative Capital Orientation. She was one of their first grantees, I think.
Yeah.
You know, both her and Agnes, again, are people who sort of lived in this very unapologetic way. And her work in particular and what it covered in terms of queer cinema, the license it gave to so many people to make, you know, great work is immeasurable. But I think one of the most impactful things that she did was to confront this idea of dying with dignity. And that was her whole last part of her life was about documenting that as a celebration of life and how to sort of do that work and as a sort of art project. And, you know, it's, you know, there's very few women in film that don't know their work. But really, I think what's happening in cinema in general through the Avas of the world, Ava DuVernays of the world, is that those people are becoming the forefronted voices, which is really critical, I think, for men and women who are venturing to make film. You know, their courageous work has nothing to do with gender. It has to do with really good filmmaking.
Yeah, and bravery.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of Agnes Varda's most recent films, Faces Places, where mm-hmm. you see a piece of her life with this photographer, J.R., who does these amazing, I mean, which
French.
Are in the film, incredible, mm-hmm. Great blow-ups of photographs that he puts in odd places, like on the Mexican-U.S. Mm-hmm. border. But her bravery about exposing herself is in the film and incorporating it, hard to do and not look silly about it. And she didn't look silly and did wonderful things. One of the films she made, Vagabond, was chosen by the music group Beach House at the festival a couple of years ago. It was the first 35mm film we ever showed at the Parkway, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was
and things like Gleaners at least bolstered movements. I mean, that whole agricultural movement. And something that I think people don't even know about her is a lot of her like direct cinema, that early work. She did the Black Panthers. She did one on Cuba.
It was part of a group that did Far From Vietnam, which is a very radical attack in the late 60s.
And it was absolutely unapologetically left-wing and very, you know, she did not insert herself, which, again, I think is a characteristic of women filmmakers as well, to know how to sort of create these stories and not center it around your ego.
It ain't Michael Moore.
Yeah. No.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah,
quite the opposite.
Yeah. Elisa Blount-Moorhead is with us here, and Jed Dietz in the Maryland Film Festival, the founding director. We're talking about movies. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday@wipr. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR, and you can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Elise, I want to talk about a thing that's on Netflix now called The Burial of Kojo.
Oh,
this is by a hip-hop artist who's made this movie. Tell us what it's about.
Yeah, he's a good friend, so I'm cheering that that's brought up. It just was recently in theaters. I know we're supposed to talk about things in the theaters now, right? But thanks
to... talk about Netflix and Amazon
good.
All the time.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no problem.
So thanks to the insightfulness and generosity of Ava DuVernay's company, Array, it's now being distributed through Netflix so people can see it now. And his name is Blitz Bazuwele. He is from Ghana and for a long time wanted to do this work. And what I love about this film is he literally translated his sort of ability in terms of lyrical prowess. He does actually sort of a combination of Afrobeat, jazz, and hip-hop into this genre, and as good as he is in music, which he's very good, he is in film as well. And what I also love is that self-determined cinema now is, you know, here that we're not going back.
So self-determined cinema, what do you mean by that?
I just made
exactly?
that up, so
yeah.
I don't know if that's the thing.
Yeah.
But really, you know, by and for. So he is a Ghanaian man telling a Ghanaian story.
And the cast is all local
Ghanaian,
people, right?
They're all speaking Twi. You know, it's incredible. And it's also sort of what I always say, you know, with its back to kind of Western critics and audiences and ideas. And it's beautiful. You know, a couple of years ago, there was a survey. I don't know if it ended up in Deadline or Variety that talked about refuting this idea that white audiences will never come to black films or never come to films from China or other places. And in fact, saying white audiences want to see more than one. They don't want to see that mythical black guy with, you know, the only white black friend, which all of us know now is preposterous. But this idea of being immersed in a world is exactly what this film does. And, you know, it's shot beautifully. It's got great music and all that sort of stuff. But really, you get insight into a way of storytelling, which is very much centered in Ghanaian culture. So...
Yeah.
Definitely.
So the stage name is Blitz the Ambassador.
Yeah.
I guess that's how he performs.
Yeah.
But the movie is called The Burial of Kojo, and it's on Netflix. Jed, there's a film at the Parkway, a German, Austrian film called Styx.
Hmm.
Tell us about that.
Also, other cultural. I mean, this is a story of a super competent woman, a doctor, who wants to detach from the hassles of Western culture in her daily life. And she takes off on a boat heading for Ascension Island, an island that Darwin had populated with plants and sort of mythical island. And then she confronts nature. And I don't want to give anything away in the film, but it's a really incredibly beautiful film that... Suzanne Wolf, who's the star of it, Wolfgang Fischer, who's the director and writer, all both sort of emerging, just beautifully made and very important to see.
Elisa, what did you think?
Oh, I you know, it was interesting. I enjoyed it because I think, again, even though it was written and directed by a man, she really centered, through her performance, she was able to center a female perspective. But also the DP and... the color grade in that film
incredible.
Was crazy.
The director of photographer.
Yes,
right?
I'm sorry.
Photography.
Yes,
right?
And because there's a storm scene, which I don't want to give away.
She spends a lot of the movie on a boat, I guess, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think the whole, you know, probably 95%. So it and he just stopped short of a sort of white savior film, I think, which was my, you know, when partly through the film, it was my fear of what was happening, but. It's really good storytelling,
yeah.
I think.
And Jed, we mentioned this a little bit last month, but I do want to talk about it because it's opening at the Charles Theater tomorrow, and this is a documentary about Apollo 11.
So I saw this at Sundance this year, and, you know, in the wake of First Man and et cetera, I mean, who could have thought using footage from NASA, which is an audio from NASA, you could compile a film of this journey to the moon and back that it certainly very momentous historically, but how could it live again as a film? And the truth is, this is the best version of it, with all due respect to to Damien Chazelle, who I thought made a wonderful movie, way overlooked movie called First Man. But this thing is really breathtaking. And who had the Emmy? Just as an artist, I'm sure, Alyssa, we haven't talked about this at all, but I'm sure you feel this. Who, as an artist, thought got NASA to commit the resources that they committed to get this audio and this footage? I mean, whoever had that insight deserves a medal, because this is a story that should live forever and would have only lived with Todd Miller making this incredible film from the NASA footage and audio.
Yeah, Apollo 11.
And should be seen in a movie theater. This is another one you've got to see on the biggest screen you can get to.
All right, so that's at the Charles Theater. The Senator, by the way, has Us and comes to the other big movies, Pet Sematary, Captain Marvel, Dumbo, which everybody's talking about. But, Alyssa, let me talk about another one that's going to be at the Parkway Theater for one night only, tomorrow night. This is a director named Sandy Tan, and she's going to host this documentary that she did. It's called Shirkers. Mm-hmm. So what did you think?
It's funny. I watched Shirkers with my husband, and he was like, "Oh my God, she's you." I think we're actually the same age. But her life was happening in Singapore at the same time, and that I was sort of her, coming of age or whatever. And what I love about this film, again, it's a sort of first person. When it started, I thought, "Oh, is this going to be too self-referential?" And I was a little scared. But it does two things for me. It talks about the sort of hierarchy and setup of film, and
because it's about her making a movie.
Yes, very much so, and sort of interlopers. And so,
the movie was sort of stolen, some original footage. So
it's been absent for 40 years, and sort of her sort of obsession or preoccupation with this thing that happened, and you start to wonder as you get older, did I do that? Did this thing happen? And so you ride along with her on that, and then it also gives you what I think a lot of films are doing right now, a different lens on Singapore. And you watch from when she made the film to now, Singapore becoming what we know it to be.
Crazy Rich Asians.
Right. Crazy Rich Asians, which again is also another sort of self-determined lens from a different angle very much. But watching her come of age and exploring in what would be sort of a technically homogeneous culture, again, it's exciting for me to see that, because I think people make assumptions about people that grow up in these spaces that they don't have a good grasp on things outside of their world, and they're not able to focus on their nuance. And she does it.
And she's coming tomorrow night. She'll be at the screening tomorrow night.
She'll introduce the movie. And there's another one that's coming next Friday to the Parkway, Jed, called Ash is Purest White. Yeah. This is by a Chinese director. What's this one about?
Well, so it starts, it's about a little gang, and two people specifically in the gang, a man and a woman. And I think literally the movie is about the power of love, and as irrational as it is, the pull of it.
Or the disempowerment of love.
it can go in both directions for sure, but powerful.
Yeah.
And it shot in a couple places in China, again, places I knew nothing about, where the filmmaker Zhang Kongge had grown up. And he's one of this young, radical group of filmmakers that has been making films sort of in and around this very labyrinthine bureaucracy in China of, what message you get to tell and all that stuff. And he starts in northern Qinghai province in the coal part of the province, very industrial, very tough, and then moves to the south where the Three Gorges Dam is, a whole different dynamic. And it's everything is starting to be infused in the 20 years of this film with Western, specifically American culture. I mean, the village people have part of the soundtrack. I mean, there's a funeral sequence that I don't want to ruin. That's one of the most unbelievable funeral sequences I've ever seen in a movie. It's just magnificent filmmaking. He's been at Cannes with various films. I mean, he's honored. This is the first one of his films I've seen, and I can't wait for it to be on the big screen at the Parkway.
Yeah, and Alyssa, you liked it as well.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. It's, he's a leader in the sort of sixth generation, Chinese cinema movement. And it, again, is very much about faces you've never seen, archetypes you've never seen, ways of being, motion, movement. And I think it's cool that maybe it'll be there at the same time as Kalika Law's Black Mother, which also does a very similar kind of essayist view of life and things that I think people don't necessarily have access to, or at least they don't have it through that lens. So yeah. He does a good job of both doing that and then also taking you on a kind of thrilling ride in this sort of alternative love story. You know, I keep hearing, oh, it's the Bonnie and Clyde of China, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like nothing you've never seen because they don't sort of move the same way, think the same
way. Characters reveal themselves. They're completely surprising developments in the movie about the two main characters that are just wonderful to see.
I mean, these are the sensibilities really important? You know, is there a Chinese sensibility? Yes. Is a Jordan Peele and a Spike Lee movie a Black sensibility? Is a Coppola movie an Italian sensibility?
Yeah. I think there's a multiplicity of sensibilities because, again, you know, a lot of the Jordan Peele sensibility was, you know, completely different. I would never connect to some of those things. But again, someone on mainland versus someone who is making a film in Taiwan, there are so many deep sensibilities. And I don't even need to be there or be a part of it to really latch onto it. So I'm assuming and hoping that that's what audiences will also connect with. But it's different. It is not a Eastern rendering of a Western idea. These mm-hmm. are ideas that you've not seen before.
And, you know, the transferability of this just financially, Jed, I mean, you take a movie like Us. The opening weekend for Us, $70 million, the biggest opening for a horror movie ever, I guess, and not since Avatar did a original live-action drama open as big as Us did, $70 million in that first weekend. So there is, and it's already done, I think, $20 million overseas, and it's only been out for, I mean, it was debuted at South by Southwest, and that was not too long ago, right?
March,
that was sometime in the middle of March.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly, the financial part of it, there's a market for this. I mean, Ashes Purest White, Shirkers, Styx, we're talking about small indie movies, but there's a market for these sensibilities.
I couldn't agree more. And another just sort of marketing data point on Us that's fascinating is usually a horror movie falls off very quickly. It didn't happen with Get Out because Get Out opened in a very narrow way and then grew. But Us opened much bigger because of the anticipation and premiering at South By and all that sort of stuff, and didn't fall off the kind of numbers you would see a horror movie. And we'll see as it continues.
Because people are just still talking about it.
Yeah.
It's like it's the water cooler conversation. That we don't have water coolers anymore, but, you know, we don't all watch the same news broadcast. But, boy, that movie and Get Out, you know, was just something people were talking
about.
But
you're right. I mean, Shirker, Styx, Ash is the Purest White. I mean, these are all coming from very different places. They're totally, completely different movies with very individual sensibilities, artistic sensibilities driving them. But just fascinating. And these are all new filmmakers.
Yeah. You know? Well, we haven't had time to talk about them, but just to mention to folks if they're looking for something to do this weekend, The Public, which is a new Alec Baldwin movie, is at the Charles Theater. Julianne Moore's new movie, Gloria Bell, is at the Charles. The Hummingbird Project with Jesse Eisenberg. The Aftermath, which is a Keira Knightley film. These are all at the Charles Theater, so there's plenty of stuff to go check
Babylon,
out this weekend.
See Babylon. You can't see it anyplace else.
That's true. Right. That's a good
cult
movie
classic.
Too.
So that's being screened
at the Parkway.
It's a 1980 English film, Babylon. So lots to see.
Yeah,
Elisa, good to see you. Thank you for coming by, Jed. Always a pleasure, sir.
Always fun. Thanks.
We'll see you soon. The filmmaker Elisa Blount Moorhead is the creative partner at Teaneg Studios, and Jed Dietz, of course, the founder of the Maryland Film Festival. Coming up after a break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews the second part of the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company's Henry plays. I'm Tom Hall. We'll talk about that in just a second. Stay with us.